Good morning. It's time for another conversation. This is High Desert Dialogue, conversations with Regina and Roxanne, here on Talk 960. Let's start talking.
Good morning, Roxanne. How are you?
Good morning, Regina. Hi to our listeners. Hope you're enjoying the weekend.
I know. We just had a big holiday weekend, right?
Hopefully it's the unofficial time of summer, school, maybe alt for some of you, but hope you enjoy it. It's great outside. The weather is nice.
Yeah, well, you know, it's my favorite time of year. Well, Roxanne, you know what? I don't want to waste any time because we have one of my favorite people here.
Mm-hmm. A repeat guest, yes.
Yes, and he's actually here in studio with
That's
us.
That's exciting.
I'm excited to have Sheriff Shannon Dykus here with us, who serves as the Sheriff Coroner for San Bernardino County. I believe he's the 36th. To do so. And you know what, Roxanne? Mm. He was elected to this role on June 7th, 2022. And the reason why that's significant is because my birthday is June 7th.
Great. We're coming up on your anniversary,
yes.
Sheriff, too.
But just to give us a little bit of context, because I think sometimes we don't really understand the scope of this job, right? So San Bernardino County, of course, has over 2 million residents, and it's the nation's largest county geographically,
correct,
spanning more than 20,000 some odd miles, right? The department that Sheriff Dykus oversees includes the unincorporated county areas, operates the county jail systems, provides marshal services in the county courts, and contracts law enforcement services to 14 of the 24 unincorporated or incorporated cities within the county. The department consists of, and this number may have changed now, I don't know, we'll find out, about 2,007 sworn personnel, 2,073 professional employees, and 1,552 volunteers, with an annual budget of over $800 million. Right? Mm-hmm. So you can see why I'm excited that he found time to come in and spend with us and talk to community, because he got a big job.
Yes, he does.
Okay. So Sheriff Dykus, welcome to Conversations with Regina and Roxanne. We are excited to have you join us.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you for being here. And I want to jump right in because we really appreciate the opportunity to have you here with us here in the High Desert. So I want to kind of get you to give us an overview of what's going on with the Sheriff's Department countywide, and then we'll drill down. I've got some specific questions to ask about High Desert, right? But just to get us started.
Mm-hmm. Well, number one, thank you both for inviting me here. I am very proud to be a repeat guest, and
yes,
especially speaking to the High Desert community. I mean, if we're really looking at the community as a whole, it's affordable. A lot of people are moving into our area.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't really understand, okay, well, that's great, Sheriff. You know, people are moving here. We're getting more modern conveniences, stores, and that type of thing. But maybe you don't always think about, well, in order to keep that growth going, I have to protect it. The deputies
right.
that work with me go out there and do that. So to be up here and to talk about some of these issues and really kind of put it what I call the street view
yes.
Is really important to me. So thank you both.
You're welcome.
Yeah, well,
mm-hmm.
glad to have you. So what can you kind of tell us in terms of what's going on countywide?
So there's a number of things going on countywide. There's a number of things that affected the profession of law enforcement and really – I think the citizens, not just in our county, but in the state, have spoken and wanted some change in a number of things.
Yes.
So right now, there's some of our focus. You guys, I'm sure, have seen our press releases about Operation Consequences, for instance. And really, if you look across San Bernardino County, and I'm just going to throw out some figures, and it kind of
okay.
puts more of an exclamation mark on really what we're talking about here. So going back to that date of me, even before that, when I got appointed to be the sheriff, since I have been the sheriff, both as an appointment and the elected sheriff, we've had about 76 officer-involved shootings.
Wow.
Now, it used to be, if we were talking about this 10 years ago, if we had two, that would have been a significant number. So when we're talking about 76, you're like, wow, that's a lot. And why? Why is that happening? So some of the things that I think the public is seeing, and we're certainly seeing on the streets, is the proliferation of ghost guns, for instance.
Mm.
And why is that important? Well, it's important because when you get convicted of a felony, that takes away your right to bear arms.
Right.
Well, what's happened is a lot of these folks that are out there doing nefarious activities can print a firearm through 3D printing or buy these parts and pieces through the internet, so they avoid the 10-day waiting period to legally buy a firearm.
Right.
And unfortunately, what our deputies are seeing out there on traffic stops and a number of things, they're recovering these firearms. They're being used in those officer-involved shootings. And again, I'll give you some numbers. So, and this goes two ways. It's going to sound a bit tragic when you hear the overall numbers, but also this is what your deputy sheriffs are doing for all of us day in and day out. But San Bernardino County, as it relates to recovering these types of firearms, and this comes from the Department, State Department of Justice, is number two in the state of California. So let's think about that for a minute. You know, Regina, you mentioned 2.2 million people.
Yeah.
Well, we're number two. Number one is Los Angeles. So when you think about it, Los Angeles has 9 million people.
Yeah.
So 2.2 million and we're number two. And actually, the recovery of about 300 guns is the only thing that separates us. So that solidifies to me that our deputies are going out there and they're trying to get to the criminal element before they get to us. And they're doing a great job. And that's one of the things that we can see as citizens in terms of the effects of them going out and doing that more of a proactive policing model and community-oriented policing model is really going out there and trying to interact. So we are seeing an uptick in things like that. We are seeing, unfortunately, an uptick in some violence, certainly as it relates to officer-involved shootings. But also when I say the citizens spoke, they spoke with their votes, and I think they spoke with what their eyes are. You can have people give reports both, you know, heavy on crime, light on crime, whatever, but I think what citizens are seeing played out in the last time they voted. And what played out was a proposition called Proposition 36.
Yes. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so a lot of us have seen on the news these smash and grab type of things that are affecting local business. And what Proposition 36 did is it made some adjustments to what was prior Proposition 47, and those adjustments were to theft as it relates to felonies and also drug use as also relates to felonies, and made some adjustments. But included in those adjustments are also a chance for people to ask for help. So in the case of substance abuse, you can actually go before the court, ask for help, and now the court has other tools to sentence somebody suffering from long-term substance abuse to rehab versus going to county jail. So we actually started Prop 36 and just using that on both the drug abuse side and the retail theft side, about 925 arrests specifically related those, trying to get those people in the system. And our hope is that they certainly want the help and that they receive the help. Going back to trying to build this capacity, I'm pretty excited about this because there are certainly a number of things across this country where different law enforcement agencies, government, and also a lot of our community-based groups, particularly the Autism Society, have really been involved heavily in this and partnered together. So in explaining all the things you and I have already discussed, when you really get to the meat and potatoes of this, so for instance, a law enforcement entity that said, hey, we're not going to just mental health calls by themselves anymore, well, what that caused is the citizens that needed the law enforcement officers to go there, because if we're being frank, in the case of autism, and not everybody that's got autism, there's varying levels, of course, and it's a neurological disorder. Yes. A lot of people get that confused with the mental health piece and everything. However, to a law enforcement officer, they manifest themselves the same. So with that being said, and you think about all these things, what you actually hear is the voices of the public come out. So there are many parents that needed the police because they may have an adult child that's suffering from autism, and frankly, they're assaulting them.
Right.
But they won't call the police because they know the police are there to protect them, and it may cause a violent outcome. So some parents are taking a beating at the hands of their own children and not calling for help, and others are saying, hey, the only help I have 24/7 are the police.
Right.
So again, going back to how do we fix that, Riverside County actually is the one that introduced us to this, and it was the Blue Envelope program. And as it relates to autism specifically, what the Blue Envelope is a person suffering from autism, when they get into certain social situations, it really manifests their autism to where now they don't communicate.
Yeah, they're triggered.
They're triggered, and there's a number of things going on. So how does law enforcement recognize that, right? And we do a lot of training. But again, are you dealing with a mental health problem? Are you dealing with autism? What are you dealing with?
Yeah.
So what we came up with in working with the Autism Society, and this is how Riverside County came up with it, and we adopted the same thing, was having a blue envelope that basically the person, just rudimentary skills, even when you're in crisis, can grab the blue envelope and hold it up, and that tells a law enforcement officer there's more going on here. Inside that envelope is the person's name, what they suffer from, who we can contact to help them and do those things. So as you can imagine, that's part of our training now, where when you recognize that, okay, now it sets the officer, we still have to think officer safety and all the things we normally do, but now we realize there's more going on here.
Right.
And so that helps us get in contact with the people that can help that person. Also helps us calm the situation, because now the chaos that that person's experiencing, you know, and some of it is voices, loud noises. I mean, so many things we encounter
that's
on a day-to-day basis that may trigger
light,
them.
All of that.
The law enforcement officer can now try to help them get out of that environment, get them calmed down, and get them back to where they're functioning so we can have a normal communication process. So I'm excited to do this. But as amazing as that program is, and we're implementing it, Riverside implemented, a lot of our local police agencies here in the county are doing the same thing. I'm excited because Senator Ochoa-Bo is actually trying to take that program statewide.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's not a statewide program. It sounds it sounds great that it's helping.
And I think, Sheriff, the the envelope, I've seen the envelope, but I also believe I've seen the blue bands, the wristbands.
Sure.
And so the reason I bring that up is because for community to be aware that those things exist.
Absolutely.
And to be able to share that with those families who are challenged in that way, and know that there is an identifying factor to help them in those circumstances, you know, because I worked with the Inland Empire Autism Society while we were trying to develop some programs and strategies, actually, based on a lot of things that took place last year, right, and particularly here in the High Desert. And one of those things is when parents are stopped and their child is triggered, right? They may be stopped by law enforcement, their child is triggered. How do you communicate that? So my point is, with having that ban, you guys recognize that. So now that kind of gives you a one-up on what you may be dealing with and encountering.
Absolutely. Right? It certainly helps.
And so can you tell us how folks can learn more about this particular program and get the blue envelope and get the blue wristband and anything else that's going to help them to be able to quickly identify their particular status?
So there's a couple ways to do it. We're taking the blue envelope program on the road.
Okay.
And I know, Regina, you've been involved in a number of our community activities where actually I expose myself to the community. They all come in from varying groups and ask questions.
Yes.
And that's what we call our information exchange. So we actually have Greg Jones, really proud of him.
Yes.
He is the one that's really bringing this out and doing the boots on the ground work for this. But Greg comes out, speaks to those groups, but also Greg works in our public affairs division. So if you just type in San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, you'll find our website, go to public affairs, tell them you're interested in that, and we will send you the information.
Wonderful. I really appreciate that, Sheriff. Now, you mentioned the website. Also, I know that you've been very intentional on expanding and broadening your social media outreach. So what platforms are you on?
So we're on all the major platforms that, and it's funny, I kind of feel funny talking about this because it almost seems to be generational, right?
Yes.
So TikTok seems to be all the young people that are
right
out there. We're doing that. And we're doing it with, you know, things that I'm doing and trying to pass that into the community, but also recruitment and retention. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to what keeps me awake at night, the biggest threat we have is really being able to hire a law enforcement officer. So using these tools you're talking about are important. So getting out there to young people on TikTok, we use Instagram. Young people, are a lot of them are on that as well. Facebook, as we move generationally and get a little older, and then of course X, we find the same thing. So those are the primary platforms we're using, and we do it a number of ways. When it's press releases of things involving the community directly, things they need to watch out for, maybe we have a major crime scene or something like that, we broadcast that all through Nixle, which is an app that sends those things
to
a number.
To your phone.
It's a connector app,
yes,
right?
Yes.
and gets them directly to the phone. So that's one of our main sources of communication, all of our press releases as it relates to those. And then we're also doing the same thing on those platforms. And so what I'm hoping is the community sees exactly what our deputies are doing. But it's really, when you think about it, it's broke down locally in terms of that community. So in other words, Victorville can see what's going on in Victorville. Apple Valley can see what's going on in Apple Valley and such.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's important to me. And then as I traverse across this big county, they see, okay, where's the sheriff at? Where's his, what's going on? And then they see that, you know, we're paying attention to these issues and we're trying to take care of those things.
Yes. Well, Sheriff, I want to thank you for this wealth of information that you brought us, what you shared with us. I want to thank you and everyone affiliated with the Sheriff's Department for the work and commitment that you do, first and foremost, to keep all of us safe, right? Want to thank you for that, and truly, I mean, just to say appreciate it falls short of what we actually feel. But we are so appreciative of you coming to share with us and make it important to speak to community so that we are aware of what's going on and also of how to connect. Right. And so we hope that this will, again, not just be an annual visit, but anytime that you need to get information out, anytime that you think there's something that we as community need to be aware of, and also in a way that we can also support, because a lot of it is making sure that we're well informed to know what we're voting for. Right. Because those votes matter and they do count. Right. And so anytime that you can provide any level of that type of information, you know, you got an open door, and we will make sure that we get you on, get your people on so that they can share with us so that we can have a healthy, happy, safe community. So thank you immensely for the work that you do and your commitment to our county and specifically to the High Desert.
Yeah. Well, Roxanne and Regina, look, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I will take you up on your offer. There are many things going on in the world to come out and certainly talk to the community. But please know this. Number one, I'm super proud of this community. I raised my kids here, and I've been a part of this community. I'm proud to be the sheriff, but I'm very proud of the men and women that are doing a hard job.
Yes.
We can certainly say that maybe coming out of the pandemic, and you call it politics, you can call it whatever you want. It's a difficult job for them to do. I do believe that we're kind of swinging back to the more reasonableness side of things, and I'm looking forward to that. And I just want the community to know that we are out there. If you commit a crime, San Bernardino County is not the place to do it, because we're going to hold you accountable.
Yes.
And at the same time, because a sheriff is required to run the jail systems, we also take that seriously. And if there's a second chance to be had, we're also about making sure that second chance is available for people. So we can wear both hats, and I can keep a foot in both camps. And we can work together and make sure that this place is what it is.
You seem to be doing it very well, sir.
Yeah. We're trying. We're trying. We're swinging for the fences.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Very much.
Thank you both.
So, Sheriff, can you talk to me a little bit before you go? And I know this is a big subject and an issue of major concern for a lot of us, but immigration. Can you talk to us about the current status of that and your involvement?
Sure. So there's a number of things going around as it relates to immigration and immigration enforcement. And I know there's some community members that are certainly concerned about it, and there have been some recent changes. So I'm just going to talk about some of the governing pieces of legislation that focus on how law enforcement in California has to interact with immigration, and then also some even more recent changes.
Okay.
So Senate Bill 54 is really the guiding policy, if you will, in the state about what law enforcement can do. So if it's a heinous crime, a rape or a murder or something like that, we can interact with ICE in those circumstances. What used to traditionally happen was what we called administrative hold orders.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it was coming from ICE themselves. And when Senate Bill 54 came along, basically says that law enforcement in the state of California cannot abide by those anymore. The only thing we could abide by for is a warrant signed by a magistrate.
Okay.
And basically the way that regulates law enforcement is really the state says you can't use your resources. So we used to do a lot of this work inside the jails, but when Senate Bill 54 came along, we were no longer allowed to do that anymore, except, like I said, in the most heinous type of crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, what's different now? Well, what's happening is ICE is actually going into communities, people are being arrested, and then they're going to ICE facilities, in which we aren't involved in that. And frankly, I think this is one thing we need to clarify. local law enforcement for years and years and years hasn't been involved in that ever.
Okay.
However, where it did manifest itself was more in the area of fraud. So the arrests we used to be able to make as a state law enforcement officer were things like if you had a forged Social Security card,
okay,
or something like that, right. We would make the felony arrest on that. And there's some of the laws have now since changed. But going back to this idea of resource, so we are not proactively going out and doing immigration enforcement. But one of the most recent changes that law does require law enforcement to act on is the U.S. attorney is now, and they just released this via a press release yesterday.
Okay.
They have a program where what they're doing is when they realize somebody is in the country illegally in the state of California, the U.S. attorney is seeking a magistrate's warrant. So that is the due process. They've got to explain to the magistrate why they're seeking the warrant. The magistrate signs it, and then it goes into a national database that law enforcement, when they run a person's name, they get that hit. If that warrant is there, to a local law enforcement officer, that is a order by a judge to take that person into custody, and that is something we have to act on. They would be booked into jail, and then ICE would be required to come and get them.
Okay.
So that's the difference. That's the latest thing.
Okay.
And Senate Bill 54 does allow for that judicial process to occur, and that's something law enforcement's been asking for a while just to bring clarity. To this mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah.
But I go and I talk to folks regularly about this. We have a great relationship with the consulate down there in San Bernardino.
Okay.
As far as being able to refer people to the correct resources. You know, even immigrants in the country, if they're looking to establish their naturalization in this country, what they need to do is go to the consulate. There's so many things that are free for them to start out there, and there's mm-hmm. specific instructions being given now to be able to do that.
Right.
So because of that work, again, if you just type in San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, our Public Affairs Division handles this. We have those contacts.
Okay.
And if somebody's asking about Senate Bill 54, what we're doing, or that type of thing, and even our resources in the jail, is somebody in custody. A number of things we do in custody that most people don't realize is if we do receive any administrative type of information, that we notify the inmate in custody, but they're also notified of their rights. And so it is not something that's happening in a vacuum or right. in a black hole, so to speak. These things are all forward, and these are things that we're able to work together. I personally appreciate the clarification with the magistrate's piece of this.
Yes.
Because it is something that makes sense. I think it also helps the community in terms of that due process piece being met. But there's still going to be some angst with this. So you can imagine, yeah. mm-hmm. as a sheriff, so many things get turned political or they're highly volatile on social right. media or what's going on. And I can tell you I've been vilified by the far right and vilified by the far left.
Yes.
But I want the citizens sure. of San Bernardino County to know we're always going to abide by the law. And right. that is what we do in this county. And every sheriff in the state is doing the same thing.
Right.
Where we are 100%, doesn't matter about the verbiage you're hearing out there or anything else. We are 100% abiding by the okay. with the law. And great. I encourage folks to be involved with their consulates. The information's there, and many times it's even free. And we are out there with that information. And it goes back to, I think most citizens agree when it comes to immigration, if you're committing crime in the United States, you should go to jail. And that's where I stand as the sheriff also. But at the same time, I want to make sure everybody understands we're providing for people's rights, due process, and taking care of that, but don't commit crime in San Bernardino County.
Gotcha. Hey, Roxanne, you know, every now and then we get these really special high-energy events going on,
yeah,
right?
And this is a very exciting event from the city of Victorville that we're going to talk about today. And kids ages 7 through 17 are invited to participate. So we're going to find out what
Absolutely.
It's all about.
And it's the perfect time. It's summer.
It is. And yes. showcase your talent.
Yes. So we're really excited to have in studio with us this morning Lizette Lagunas, who is the recreation manager for the city of Victorville. Lizette,
welcome
to Conversations with Regina and Roxanne.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And so you're here to talk to us today about Victorville Sings competition.
I am.
And it's my understanding now that competition has existed for what, about 5 years?
Yep, this would be our five-year anniversary.
Fifth anniversary, so be a part of it.
Yes. Okay, so I'm just going to turn it over to you. Tell us everything that we need to know, who this is for, who can join, how they can join, what happens, are there prizes involved, just the whole gamut.
Sounds good. There is a lot going on with Victorville Sings. So it is our internal competition, our singing competition for kids 7 to 17.
Okay.
There is a $10 registration fee to audition. And then after those auditions are going to be held on June 4th.
That's coming up.
You have time to do this.
But okay. There's still time, but June 4th.
Yes. Okay. So that's going to be from 5 to 8 p.m. At our 8th Street Community Center.
Okay.
And you can register by going to victorvilleca.gov/recreation.
Okay.
And register. And
do you have to register before, Lizette, or can you do it in person too?
You have to register before.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
So we would just want that to be done as soon as possible.
So all of those budding, aspiring, talented young singers that are between the ages of 7 and 17, you want to register now, right? Yep. Right now.
Right now.
Right. And again, tell me where they go to register.
VictorvilleCA.gov /recreation.
Okay. And then if they have any questions about anything or anything like that, will they just ask those questions when they see you on June 4th? Or will they be able to get most of those questions answered by visiting the website?
Questions can be answered by visiting the website. If they have any questions, they can always call the Hook Community Center, and we will be able to answer those over the phone, or they can stop by in person, and we can answer those.
And is there a number for the Hook Community Center?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
So the phone number is 760-951-3812. Do have a cash prize.
Ooh. Yeah. Okay, now talk to us about that.
Yeah. Our first prize winner actually gets a $500 cash prize.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, every little bit helps. That's a great incentive.
You look like you could be about 10, so maybe you
can. Oh, my goodness. But I honestly don't have a singing voice, but I can be a manager. That would be great.
Some summer money, some summer income.
Okay, yes, hey, that's good.
Great. Mm-hmm. So now they go through the auditions.
Yeah.
Right? And then what happens after the auditions if they're selected?
Our top 15 contestants go on to perform at our Concerts at the Park series.
Okay.
So we have those in June and July. June 20th, June 27th, July 11th, and July 18th.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there we actually have live voting via text
from the public.
Yes.
Oh, fun.
Super fun.
Okay.
So it's the last. So their final competition is on the last day of the concert series.
Yes. So okay. July 18th.
July 18th.
Yeah, that's when we'll have our winner.
Okay. So High Desert, come on, because this is our own Victorville Sings competition.
Yeah.
But it's just like
it's American Idol for the High Desert.
Idol. There you go. Mm-hmm. Victorville Voice. Come on, we got to get out here and support our young people. What fun,
so fun.
An opportunity for them to showcase their talents and win some money.
And Lizette, too, in the years past, this is the fifth anniversary again. How many people actually volunteered in the last few years? Has it grown every year?
Yeah, we've had multiple participants throughout the years. But we're really hoping that this is the year that we get the most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So here's how we're going to get the most is because they're going to go and register before or by June 4th, right?
Yes, correct.
And how do they register again?
They go to victorvilleca.gov/recreation.
And there is a $10 registration fee.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. And this contest is available for kids ages 7 through 17.
But what a great investment, $10, and then you win $500.
This would be a great summer thing. This is great. And then the public gets invited to participate as well. And like you said, it's a community. It brings everybody together.
Right. And it's a showcase for our young people.
Yeah.
What a great idea. Well, Lizette, we want to thank you for coming in and sharing this really special news. We hope that, we don't want the website to crash, but
Where can we find out more?
Inundated with those who are willing to compete, right?
I would love that.
Yes, we would love to have that. And then we're looking forward to hearing these dynamic young folks
perform at
concerts in the park throughout the summer. And we just appreciate you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again for being a part of the conversation. Reach out to us and let us know what you want to talk about. send us an email at RoxanneScafidi@edbroadcasters.com. High Desert Dialogue, conversations with Regina and Roxanne. We'll talk to you next weekend.